to the Parentpreneur Accelerator podcast, helping you build the business of your dreams while having time with the family you love. Here is your host, Cyril, the entrepreneur and proud dad, Alexis Kingsbury.
Thank you very much for your help, Ethan. Hi there, it's Alexis here, and in this week's episode, I'm interviewing Rebecca Cross. Rebecca is a business success and motivational strategist who works along aspiring female entrepreneurs that are looking to build their dream business and achieve the lifestyle that they deserve, not in the future, but now. Rebecca's goal is to help 2 million women step into their greatness and achieve their dreams, taking it one step at a time. Rebecca's got an emotional story that has made her the great woman that she is today. And although she suffered mental abuse, learning difficulties and more, Rebecca found strength in her dark times and managed to rise from the shadows to shine a light on the women that she now mentors every single day. Rebecca has built her own successful business empire within coaching and property. She's studied motivation, business strategy and mindset so that she can motivate and support other women and enable them to realise that anything is possible. And alongside her busy career, she also manages family life with her husband and three kids. So in this episode, we're going to discuss how to build a business empire around being a mum, finding your passion and how you can make this your living, feeling the fear and pushing through it, and I guess lots of other things too. So Rebecca, thanks so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you for having me. Thank you. Hello. How are you doing?
Yeah, great. So let's start off with a bit about your kind of background. And I sort of alluded to the emotional story there and what kind of led you to start the area of study and what you then went into starting your business. So would you mind telling us a bit more about that?
Yeah, of course. Thank you. Well, I did the most traditional things that you normally do when you're growing up. You know, you go to school, you go to college, university, and through that time, you know, I had my challenges, but I ended up in a corporate job with IBM and the Wall Street Journal, all those kind of things, got married, and when I was pregnant with my first, Emily, 11 years ago, my husband decided that he would trot off and leave us, and basically I was very, very lost, because when I was growing up, I was such a fighter I won't go through it all, we'll be here all day, but you know, through foster care, through being dyslexic, by not being able to read at an age of 7 when I was 14, I had a lot of challenges. And when I met my first husband when I was 15, he really took me under his wing. And that Rebecca, who was a fighter, was very much being looked after financially, looked after emotionally. And so when I was then 27 and fell pregnant with Emily and had Emily just at 28, my husband left us, and I didn't even know how to pay electricity bill. That old Rebecca that I was a fighter growing up, was lost. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, my husband dealt with everything. And I was working at the Wall Street Journal at the time on maternity leave, and Emily was 2 weeks old, and all of a sudden a light bulb moment came on, and that old Rebecca was surfacing, and it was like, right, I am going to start a business, and I am going to be a millionaire, and Emily is never going to have anything that I've gone through with a child or go through any of this. And I'm going to show everyone I can do this. I will figure out how to pay this electricity bill alongside figuring out how to build a business and figure out how to change the nappy, figure out about the Aptamil, figure about the Calpol. I'm going to do it. And I just basically started my journey as an entrepreneur, and I've had a number of businesses over the 11 years. I've sold some, I've built some have gone flop, some have gone really well. To the day that I've now got two companies, which is my property company and my business mentoring and coaching. And throughout that time, I've carried on with my, education in terms of studying NLP and motivation, and of course, business strategy. So it's been a heck of 11 years.
Fantastic. Well, that's and thanks so much for sharing that, because I think that gives us a real insight into the kind of challenges that you had, and I love the way in which you talk about it as well. And I think it's probably I'm probably getting a hint of the NLP or neuro-linguistic programming kind of learning there around describing the old Rebecca and like that Rebecca, and the way in which you kind of seen that rather than kind of looking at it from the inside. It's clear that you've kind of taken this and used an approach where you kind of look at it, you know, taking a bit more perspective and looking at the kind of stages of your life and the roles and attitudes that you took on. And that's, I think, really inspiring, and I can imagine incredibly useful for anyone who's kind of struggling at the moment, or indeed perhaps has had struggles in the past and kind of finds having that a part of their identity difficult.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I started out, there'll be some parents who are going through this, especially if they're a single mum. I mean, I'm not a single mum now, but I was then. Mm-hmm. Is that you? I got very attached to Emily. I mean, unhealthily attached. Like, nobody could pick her up. Nobody could be with her. She was, you know, I remember at night time, I would be holding Emily, and I'd know I should put her in a cot. But I'd be like, oh no, we're cuddling. Because I was lonely. I didn't have any support or family. And I was starting this adventure of building a business. And I needed Emily. And it's about looking at yourself when you start a business, especially as a parent, and especially if you're a single parent, that there is a journey and there's a growth. And your struggle today will always be your strength tomorrow. I always maintain that. And every level you go up to, being even as a parent, you know, it's another level when they turn two. And when they're turned two, as we know with toddlers, there's another devil. And it's like this in business. You know, when you get to your year two in business, there'll be another level you've got to face with another devil. You know, there's always challenges. And I remember when I started out, I had to believe to myself and have faith that I can do this, but I can't put the consequences of the actions that my ex-husband made at the time and the things that were going on that onto Emily. So it's about, let's make it something into a positive. So it was also about, because I was very clingy with Emily, I needed to have a business at the time that was going to fit my needs financially, something that I could do, and something that I could have Emily with me. And I know that there is this lots of businesses out there going, oh, have this business, work from home. But the reality is, when you work from home, your children do cry, your children do need you, and your children will be unpredictable. It's not like you can say to a little child, stay still and don't speak for an hour, I'm working. So it was very much about, what is that first business going to be? And I always say to anyone, if you're a parent as well or not, is that when you start a business, you have to have passion. It has to be something that is not going to be a drag. It's not something you're going to do just because you want to work from home and you want to be with a baby. It's got to be something that you really have some kind of belief and passion that potentially it can grow while your children grow. So you're not putting pressure on yourself. It's something that will grow so you can put more hours in it, the less hours you're with your children, i.e. when they go to nursery or when they start school. And it's a progression. And that's what I've done over the years with many of the businesses I've had. And especially when I had my two boys, you know, I was building another business. I had a VA business back then, and I was building something that was fitting around the boys. But then when the boys started school, and Emily, of course, is now about to start secondary school in September. Oh, my gosh. I mean, oh, my gosh. No, how's that happened? But, you know, I very much believe that it puts that pressure off, but it gives you that opportunity to live the dream and the lifestyle that many people crave. Because not everybody, when they've had a baby especially, sometimes going back to work and creating somebody else's dream, which is your employer's, because you're working at 9 to 5, is not necessarily what somebody else wants when they realise they've got this little person that they want to be with. So I had lots of things and lots of challenges I had to face, and that's why my first business was actually an online kitchenware business where I sold Cornish blue and antique kitchenware, and it worked really well, and eBay was at its height back then. So I also did it on eBay. So there was lots of things you should can think about. And my point is, there's no reason that anybody can't start a business. No reason. it's just, there's just certain foundations and how that fits in with your lifestyle. And as a parent, it's no different, I believe. So, yeah, it's good learning. Lots of lessons so far.
Yeah, and I there's so much that I agree with there. That's really, really great advice, and particularly that, as you said, there's no reason for anyone not to, or at least there's nothing really holding people back. I've talked on the podcast before about sort of fear and real obstacles and perceived obstacles and so on, and how to overcome them. It's but you know, and you've given a great example of how, with zero experience running businesses and at a very difficult time in your life, you just went, you know, you just decided that you were going to do it, and then found your way and supported that with learning and so on to make it work. And I think I just, you know, it's a good example and shows how people can do that. I think, you know, you mentioned that you started with the sort of the kitchen business and doing the eBay side and so on. Obviously, that's now changed. That's not a business that's still going on at the moment. How have you found that kind of process of starting, building, growing, closing businesses? Yeah. Because I think that can be hard for people, particularly someone who's maybe had one business and, you know, went well, and then they either made a mistake or the market just turned against them, or a combination of factors, etc. And as a result, they, you know, they end up losing the business, or having to close it, or even just now they're in a difficult position where they probably should close it. Like, yeah, that's a very difficult challenge mentally to get over. How did you find that, and kind of how have you sort of reconciled how to kind of deal with that when that now happens and occurs for you?
So I'm a great believer, when you have a business, and this is what I do with my kitchenware business, I did not in the early days have a clue what I was doing. I spent a fortune on my Barclay card, getting a web developer to put together this old fancy e-commerce, you know, website. I didn't even understand the back end of it. And I was making more money on my eBay account than I was on this website. And I thought, right, straight away, what is making money and what isn't? You know, every single week, I always look at something that I call income-producing activities. So every single thing I do on a daily, day-to-day basis, does that make me money? Will that generate me money? So things like building relationships, you know, talking to other mums, finding out what people are doing if you were building a business, that would be classed in myself as an income-producing activity, because you don't know what that relationship's going to lead to and how you can help each other. And it's the same thing goes with my day-to-day activities. When I look at my businesses and I'm thinking, right, is this making money? How much time am I spending? Have I got the right knowledge? Do I need help and support? And when I got to my kitchenware business, for example, I was realising that I was getting a little bit of money from this website, but not really, probably the odd product now and then over a certain amount of time, that it wasn't serving. So I had to get rid of it. So I kept with the eBay, but the eBay wasn't bringing in enough money. And so I was at the Wall Street Journal before Emily was born. And so it was about going back to basics, thinking out the box and thinking, well, what do I know? Well, I was a senior advertising executive for many years. I worked for banks like HSBC, Credit Suisse, UBS. I had lots of million-dollar campaigns I had to work with. So I thought, well, I know what I'll do. I'll set up a community magazine, which are now all over the country. They weren't that common when I started, and it was a little A5 glossy magazine. So it was a matter of, I've got one business bringing in the odd £500 a month off eBay. Right, now I need to do what I love. And that is selling. That is my bag. So, you know, if it's not your bag and it's not for many, you need to think of something that you really enjoy that comes back to that purpose. So I always learn, what do I know and what am I good at? What motivates me? What makes me get out of bed in the morning, no matter what my struggles are? And I love talking. I definitely love talking. God, you'll never shut me up. But I really do like selling, and I like giving somebody something that is a solution. So with the magazine, it fitted around Emily. She was in a pram, and I went around the streets of Southwest London of all the shops, and I sold advertising space, and I put in free content, and I loved it. But then again, 2 years later, you know, we had a recession going on. It was still going on when we got to 2010. Things were still not great with the economy. And it was like, right, what am I going to do now? Well, this is, I can sell this as a going concern. I had one salesperson helping me out. I had companies like Debenhams in it, the local Debenhams. And it's like, well, I need to sell it. So my, going back to your question is, never be complacent. It doesn't matter if you think your business is just a little part-time, or it doesn't matter what it is. If you've got something that is making money, you have a business. So you need to think about every day, okay, what am I spending my time on, and what return is coming back? And is this a time for me to let go? And sometimes as entrepreneurs, we can get emotionally attached sometimes. And I certainly can. And sometimes it comes to a point where you've got to think with your head and not your heart, and think, well, is the passion still there? Is this taking me where I want it to be? And that's sometimes how I've found when you need to reevaluate and see how you can still accomplish something from it. So for me, with magazine, I sold it, and then I moved on to a VA business, which was something different. But again, my passion was still there, because I like selling and I like building relationships and I like talking. So I don't know if that's answered the question, but I'm very much about, you know, it doesn't matter how you are in business, to overcome challenges, overcome failures. It's about, don't give up. It's about reevaluating everything. Now, I spent a fortune on that Barclay card. I never broke even on that. You know, that was a loss. But you learn from it on how you be better for next time, which is what the lessons I took with the magazine. Does that make sense? Am I going off on a tangent here? Is that
no,
making
no,
sense?
That's perfect. I think there's some really great advice in there, because it is hard. And you know, as I said at the beginning of the question, like, there'll be people who have either had businesses that haven't worked, or they've had to close and so on, or they're finding it tough at the moment, and they kind of deep down know that they probably need to close it or significantly change it, and they're being resistant to that. And I think it's useful to kind of share that experience of how it doesn't always go the way you want, and that there are peaks and troughs. There are times when you've taken something as far as you can. And I think it's great that you've highlighted there's so many other options. You know, there's so many options out there, including just closing it and doing something else. And I think it is about being ready to take that step and be comfortable that the fact that you've closed a business, or even had a failed business that's properly, you know, gone up in a ball of flames, doesn't make you a failure as a person. And I think picking up and doing the next thing, and as you said, you know, learning from it and using it in the next business is just so important. One things that I think some people imagine that is important is kind of is having a sort of a diverse array of businesses, or aiming to build a sort of diverse portfolio of businesses. What's been your approach to that? Obviously, you mentioned that you've essentially got two businesses that are still active at the moment. What's been your experience of kind of managing that diversity? Do you feel like it is important to do it? What benefits do you find that you're currently getting by having the two, and what are the disadvantages, and what would you recommend for others?
I think if you were classing somebody as an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. I always think that's somebody who is, you need to have a multiple of income streams. If you're somebody who wants to build up an empire, one empire, you're focusing on one thing, like, you know, like Apple, for example, you know, or, you know, the bigger companies, but still those owners will reinvest in other areas. I think the key thing is, you have a multiple of income streams, and you've got to see that as a good thing on how you can build, and also have a plan B if something flops. For me, I love having a diversified income stream, because I've got so much passion and so much energy, and I do have that shiny coin syndrome sometimes. And it's about, okay, hang on, before I jump to that next thing, how will this serve me as a person? How will this serve my family? So, for example, when I set up the property company, that was very much about the long game. It's very much about, it's not a quick fix for me. I do have a property strategy that gives me high cash flow, but it's not about that for me. It's about, I do want to house people who can't afford right now the ridiculous rent that's in this country, the silly property legislation that's going around, and the high fees that of course, tenant agencies charge. So I wanted to make an impact on that, to have property and also have an investment in my family that would grow. So I do automate things. So again, going to your question, the pros of that is you do have to be brave and be able to be remembering that, to have to build on that. You can't do everything. So you do need to, the things that you're not good at, or the things you're not even interested in doing, and the things that you're thinking, I really need help with this in other shape or form, you need to outsource. So that will help you grow quickly, and it will also help make sure that you are not leaving anything on the table or dropping any balls. The things that you really love and you're passionate about, those are the things that I focus on. So I always meet all my tenants because I love meeting people. I've got good intuition, so I know if I think they're going to trash the place or not. Then normally, touch wood, nothing but that, that's happened. But I also love my mentoring and coaching. My empowering women is my, oh my God, it's my mission. I dedicate my life to it. All the other stuff, the back end stuff, the technical side, my pipelines, my email list, my accountant, my bookkeeping, I work to make sure I've got enough money coming in to get somebody else to do that for me. If you're very open to that, and you can see the bigger picture and what your vision is, bringing more people into your team, be it outsourcing or actually getting employees, helps you to build that diversified portfolio. However, I am also a great believer on focusing one thing at a time. So, you know, when I focused on my magazine, I made sure that the eBay, which is what I eventually had, was stable and I could manage that. But when I decided to close the magazine and use the VA business, my VA business, ironically, actually was still going when it was transitioning slowly into mentoring coaching. And the property, I didn't start until I had a stable income and I had a stable hours to fit around the children for me to then focus on finding properties. That's the kind of pros of, yes, it's a great idea, but the cons are, if you're jumping from one thing to another for that shiny penny, you're going to drop a ball somewhere, and that could be very expensive for you, where something you might jeopardise something you've worked really hard on something else. Is that making sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a really tricky one, because I think that exactly as you say, as an entrepreneur, and indeed as a adult human, it is useful and important for you to essentially protect yourself from risk, and financially that often means making sure that you've protected the income streams that you've got, and where you're unable to completely protect it, then it makes sense to diversify. I think the problem that I see is a lot of people misunderstanding the ways in which you can do that. And so they think of it as, you know, oh, well, I've got to start multiple businesses and kind of just spread myself across all of those things. And I think that they miss a few of the other things that they should be doing first. Like, actually, no, don't build multiple businesses at the same time. Build one at a time so you can focus all of your kind of innovative thinking on one at a time. And before you move on to the next one, as you say, like, make sure you've got the processes set up, make sure that you've got a steady income stream and so on. I guess something that as well that is often not talked about is there is so much that you can do to make the particular, like, your initial income stream safer. I think that, you know, like, and you'll have probably experienced that too, when you're moving from the eBay business and then into the VA business and so on, we all overlook the fact that actually we look at a business often as optimistic entrepreneurs and say, oh yeah, that's sorted, that's great. And actually there's loads of single points of failure that mean that the business could get blown over by a, you know, somewhat gentle wind. but we don't see it. And of course, if someone says, oh, it seems quite risky, our answer to that is, oh, don't worry, I'm building another business. And it's like not appreciating that actually does a little to help, but probably doesn't solve some of the biggest issues, like what if you suddenly become unavailable or whatever. Yeah. And I think it's interesting when you You mentioned that you started that answer about sort of like Apple and how, you know, do you want to, you know, if you're going to be an entrepreneur, you're probably going to need to diversify, whereas, or alternatively, you could build an empire. And of course, arguably, within those empires, there's diversification. You know, you look at
Yeah,
something like Google
exactly.
or Apple, it's like they've got
Yeah.
multiple income streams from a variety of
Yeah.
different products. Some are complementary and support each other, some are separate, some have got subscription type models to provide kind of recurring income, some are a bit
Yeah.
more based on campaigns, some based on brand, some based on product. And so I think it's important for us as entrepreneurs to think about all those other options as well, because I think as you say, like the worst thing you can do as an entrepreneur is just spread yourself too thinly and not focus, you know, as you said, focus on one thing at a time.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're not available, you know, I'm the main breadwinner, and I've got three children and a cat, and even a husband to feed. And you know, if something happens to me or something's not, and I haven't got everything in place, I have to make sure for insurance purposes that everything's okay and my family will be looked after. Or you know, if I can't work, we can still pay the bills. Now that's something that people, I know it's boring stuff, but if you really do build your business correctly, especially the parents, there's no reason you can't have, you know, have things like passive income coming in. There's no re Your world really is your oyster. It's just, I feel sometimes in this society with businesses, and especially on the online space, everybody wants a quick fix. Everybody wants to start a business, but I want to make £2,000 like by next week. Well, that's great, but you need to make sure you know exactly what your strategy is and what your mindset is. You know, if your mindset isn't right and you can't come out of your comfort zone, making that first £2,000 won't be as quick as you would like, and you've got to be realistic about that. So that's something else I fight a lot on the online space, especially in the coaching industry. You know, I believe strongly you can make £10,000 in a month very easily. I do it, and my clients do it, but I don't like it when I hear, "Come on now, you'll make £10,000 by week three," they're not thinking about what that fit is with that person, what their responsibilities are, what their lifestyle is like, how many children have they got, how are they going to do that? You know, have they got that energy to be able to put in that amount of work in those first 3 weeks? You know, and then somebody invests in that, and then they worry why they don't make that money. That's where you've got to be careful as well of what you're looking at and what is realistic.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I think it's such a such an important point. And I guess you know, on the one side, we might talk about how entrepreneurs tend to be optimistic and positive and think that, you know, and looking for the quick fix and thinking, oh yeah, well, you know, I'll make this money and I'll be a millionaire and then nothing bad will ever happen and so on. On the flip side, of course, a lot of us entrepreneurs, and in fact, it's often not different people to the ones that are also optimistic, can also sort of go quite negative or indeed struggle with kind of motivation and their general mindset, which perhaps isn't talked about too much because obviously in the media and so on, they tend to talk about these amazing entrepreneurs that, oh, they just believed they could do it and then they did, and look, now they're an overnight
No.
success, which of course is even those stories are rubbish, never mind
Yeah, I agree.
unrepresentative. You know, you work with a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of the work that I know that you do with them is around mindset and so on. So what are the sorts of challenges that you see and what the strategies that you use to help your clients with, particularly with sort of mindset and motivation?
Yeah, well, I tell you, this is something I do. So I was what I'm talking about now is what I equally have to do. I am the most positive person ever. I love life. If anyone says anything negative, I say out the door. But I still have to work on my mindset every day, and everyone has to. I think not just as a parent, as an entrepreneur, as even going into work, it doesn't matter what you do. I still believe this is across the board. And the one big thing in the entrepreneurial part is your money mindset. Your money mindset is massive, and I have to work on that every day. Every time I reinvest, if I don't make a sale that I expected, if I do make a sale and I'm thinking, crikey, you know, I have to work on my money mindset. So I always start with asking people the question, why do you think you have to work on your mindset? Because we're all got different personalities, and there'll be some people who are stubborn, and there'll be some people who will be very much like, oh, I do know I've got some limiting beliefs, and I do know I don't get that. But until you really dig deep and asking the question, why do you need to work on your mindset? You won't really identify what it is that you're struggling with. You know, why are you negative? Why do you think that this won't work? Why are you feeling nobody would buy from me? Why do you, because sometimes it comes from self-belief. It might come from confidence, or it may come from a limited belief that you've got your parents, you've got, you know, your children's grandparents saying, this is stupid. What are you doing this for? You need to be getting a 9-to-5 job. You've got a family to look after. What are you doing trying to risk and you don't know what your income is every day? And it's about really understanding what your relationship is with money and what your relationship is with your vision. And that's when you start to unravel really what is actually holding you back. And also not allowing, now some people might not like what I'm going to say here, so you might lose some viewers, but not using excuses. And I'm going to shout this out, right? I hear a lot sometimes about, I can't do that. I'm a mom, or I'm a single mom, or I've got to do that. It does not matter. That's your belief. That is your belief. You are limiting yourself believing you can't do something because you haven't got an X amount of money in the bank, or because, you know, you're struggling. There is a solution to everything, and that seems such a flippant comment to some, I know, and some people want to smack me around the face when I say this, but I've been there and I've done this and I work on it all the time, and it's about, well, I will find a way, and it's about how you find that way, but you have to work on what's holding you back first, and it'll be something that your subconscious mind is telling you you can't do, and a big red flag coming up. Then no, we don't normally think like this, and then this, you know, craving monkeys giving you all the fear, and it's got to come right back to the foundations. Well, first of all, do you want to change it? What do you want to work on your mindset? I mean, this is a massive field. I could talk about this all day. But it is a bit really figuring out, do you want to change that mindset, and why you think it's important? And some people do want quick fixes, and they do want to make money very fast. But we all have to build foundations, and our mindset is one of those foundations that has to be maintained. And just going back to your comment before, when you see in the paper and in the media, I believed it and I did it. Yeah, they did believe it, but there will be days that actually they were losing their confidence, or they had a bad sales call, or somebody went on their Instagram and you know, said something bad about them, or their Facebook. I mean, one of my mentors, who owns, he's done very well, he did a webinar with 80 people on it, and he's been established for some time, and he had somebody completely attacking him on this live training on this webinar, and it knocked his confidence for a week. That completely knocked his confidence. So it doesn't, again, going back to what I said at the beginning of the podcast, another level, another devil, and that's also with your mindset. So there's lots of things you need to think about, and it's about, if you really want that lifestyle you crave, or that money, or that business you want, there's going to be some really uncomfortable and out of comfort zone things you've got to do, but it's not scary. It's just embrace it and, you know, go for it. And then, but it'll be, the first thing is, I would definitely say working around your money mindset and what your relationship with money is, because that is always something, if we like it or not, people think is evil, or people think you're greedy. And I'm one of those people very confident and say, I love money. I think money is brilliant. I love it when I haven't got it. It drives me. It makes me want to get more of it. It makes me want to help more people. And we shouldn't be scared for asking for money in a conversion of, you know, an energy of exchange of saying, well, I'm giving you this service and this is what it's valued. And that's another thing. People who come into business sometimes find it hard to know what their worth is. And it comes again back to money. What's your relationship with money? Why do you think you're not worth that? Why do you think your product's not worth that? So, sorry, I've gone off on that one. I could have been on it for an hour talking about that.
don't you worry about that. There's some really useful advice on that. I think, and I particularly like that point around starting with the money mindset, because I agree that's something that I see very commonly, that sense of, you know, not imagining that anyone will want to part with money, and why would you be worth it, and then undervaluing what they do, and so on. And I think approaching that differently, I think is really good. I think starting off by identifying what's the mindset, what are the things that are holding you back, because I think you're right that if you've got anything in your head where you're saying I can't do something because, then it's like your brain just shuts off thinking about how you can do it. And it's a much better question to say, how could I do this? It's a bit like you say, you can do anything, although the time period might vary. Like, you know, if we said, oh, you can do anything you want, it's like, brilliant, can I make £1 million in the next 30 seconds? Like, well, okay, no, you can't. But what you can do is change the time period, and you can say, well, actually, if you turn it into a question of how could I make £1 million in the shortest period possible and so on, then at least your brain starts working on the problem in a different way. And I think that's such a good point that you make around making sure that that mindset is challenged, and that you're not just blocking yourself with those excuses. So I think that's really good.
Can I add just one last thing to that? I was just going to say, the other thing as well is to actually set your intentions around your mindset.
Yeah.
And I think so many of us worry about, well, I can't, and how do I do it? It's like, no, set an intention. When you say to yourself, and it's like, and I'll bring it back to parenting, you know, I am going to be potty training, and they are going to be in their own knickers or their own pants before they start school. It's an intention. As a parent, you make sure that happens. You make sure that that child is going to do that, and you're going to do everything you can to support them, to encourage them. And when they start school, they are not wearing nappies anymore. And that is what you need to do around your money mindset, your business. You set an intention, and that intention is what it's going to, that is what's going to happen. And that completely shifts your mindset automatically if you can stay with that intention, because subconsciously it's starting to, okay, I've got to rethink now. And that's a really powerful, quick way of starting working on your mindset.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And speaking of setting those big goals, I know that you've set a goal to help 2 million women step into their greatness.
I know. You think it's big enough?
Well, it's and to some extent, it's like it's both a big and a small goal, depending on your relative position, right?
Exactly.
You know,
comes down to
mindset. You know, if we spoke to Tony Robbins, the most famous, well-known sort of mindset and personal coach in the world. I'm sure that those kind of numbers would be like, oh, what? Why are you? You know, is there a venue that you can't go bigger than or something?
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas if you talk to someone who's never done it before, that number becomes so ridiculous they can't get their head around it. And I think that's an important point around the goal needs to be meaningful for you and shouldn't just be some kind of notional, you know, oh, wouldn't it be great if I had a trillion dollars or whatever?
And it's got to have meaning.
You could move.
You know, and as my growth mindset changes and where my business goes, I may be saying in a year's time it was 2 million, now it's 1 billion. I mean, it's like you rightly say, it's got to be meaningful for you. And I think that's really important and powerful.
And so how do you use a goal like that and kind of to help you and your team to kind of focus on the right activities and so on?
Yeah, so I wanted to have a goal for me, and going back to a point, meaningful, that was inconceivable. It's got to be so big in my mind right now, you know, that I'll be honest, you know, I'm still working on my mindset. I think it's important to really stress this. And I call myself out. I'm very authentic, and I'm very, you know, no BS about things. And I very much say to myself, oh God, can I really do 2 million? Is I'm going to do 2 million? Well, is that inconceivable? Well, I do think it is at the moment, actually. Right, well, that's the goal. And so right now what I do is I look at everything. It's not about me having 2 million one-to-one clients. I mean, crikey, I don't think I've got enough time for that. But, you know, I don't think I've got enough hours. It's about breaking that down. So when I've got people on my podcast, or if I've got people on my email list, or I've got people coming into my Facebook group, or if I get a testimonial, or I've got anything that I can record that I know that there is a numbers, or the 800 people that's on the Instagram or whatever, that is contributing to that 2 million. And that is about looking at the programs we put together, the messages we put together, the book we've just recently launched that's become, I may I just plug, bestseller there.
So having all
that in there, and the amount of people that will read the book, everything, that is contributing to that 2 million. And that could be even somebody that I'm in the street and someone says, I'm stuck, and I give them a little bit of advice and they join my free community. And they don't necessarily work with me, but they're part of that 2 million. They're part of my audience. And that is what it's about. It's not necessarily about having an exchange of money for it. But we've got lots of different channels to get our message out there, to get our brand out there, that it will impact. And that is part of that 2 million. It doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be paying me money, you know?
Yeah.
And that's important. You know, even the charities we're supporting, at the moment we're supporting one woman at a time. That's about young girls. That's part of that 2 million journey, which is why I hope my mindset will grow even larger, and like it should do with what I do for a living, that 2 million will shift. But right now I do bang on about 2 million, and until I'm satisfied we've got to that 2 million, then I'll then move it to the next inconceivable goal that I'll fill at that stage, you know?
Yeah, indeed. No, I love it. And unfortunately, we're coming short on time. I think it's the advice that you've given through this episode has been absolutely fantastic. So thank you so much for your time today, Rebecca.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, it's been an absolute pleasure. And before we wrap up, because I know that we could have talked for so much longer, and there's so much great advice that you've got. How can people find out more, and what other resources should they be checking out? So I'm particularly thinking about your book and any others that you'd recommend that that they check out.
Yeah, well, the best way to contact or get in touch or find out about us is either Rebecca Cross, which is on LinkedIn. You can find me on LinkedIn or Facebook. Mm-hmm. I've got my own Facebook community, which is Betting Into Greatness. That's my brand. And if you want to look up the book, which all proceeds go to one woman at a time, and it's a very, very passionate, brilliant charity, like all of them are, but it really supports young girls in India, UK and Kenya. And that's When She Rises. And you can find that on Amazon, on Kindle, on paperback. Hopefully it'll be in Waterstones and W.H. Smith soon. Mm-hmm. But at the moment, we'll just stick to Amazon.
Yep.
But yeah, you can find me on Facebook, Rebecca Cross, Stepping Into Greatness. If you Google that or find me there or LinkedIn, you can connect and find out more what we do and how we do it. But thank you so much for listening to me, and thank you for having me on your episode.
No, it's been absolutely awesome talking to you, and hearing about both how you've risen from a difficult time to find so much greatness, I guess. Thank you again, and I'll make sure that those groups and links and the book are linked to from our show notes. But otherwise, thank you again, and I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thank you. You too. Take care.
And we stop there. There we go. Yay! Well done, Rebecca. Good job.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. That's lovely. Thank you very much. I go off on one. I get all excited, especially asking about my son. I'm like, oh God, I'm going to rein this in now. I'm going to be right off on one.
No, it's great. And obviously, there's 100 things, other things I could have asked. Is there anything that feels like a particular omission that I should have asked?
No, it's perfect. I love the organic approach, just by asking questions and going with the flow, and people get to see you naturally and authentic. Authenticity is really important to me. So me just being me of what I am there and then is really great. So no, thank you so much for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
No, that's great. And I really appreciate you taking the time to speak to me today. And I know that we've got a lot of value in that episode, so I'm looking forward to that going out live. Lara will let you know once we've got a release date for it, and links and so on, so that you can share it with your networks if desired.
That'd be brilliant.
My other question is, who else should I interview? I like to take recommendations from my best interviewees. This has been an amazing interview. Who else do you think would be good?
Oh my God, why have I gone blank? I tell you, you should interview Tiffany. Lara knows Tiffany. Tiffany Skirro, Skirro. Now, Tiffany is amazing. She also, When She Rises, is actually her brand that we were part of the book of. Mm-hmm. But she's a very spiritual, she's a mum. And she was actually had her first son when she was 17, and she's got a things have happened, and she's lovely, she's brilliant, she's empowers women again, but she brings spirituality into the business, and she's a very inspiring woman. So she's definitely somebody. Lara knows Tiffany, she could connect you with.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Okay, well, that's really, really appreciated. And thank you so much again for your time. And do keep in touch. Let me know if there's anything else
definitely.
I can do for you. But thank you. Thank you again.
Thanks a lot. Take care. Have a great weekend.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode and have taken away some ideas that you can put into practice. You can find the links to any resources mentioned in this episode over on the show notes at parentpreneur.com/podcast. If you found this podcast useful, then please review it on iTunes. 5-star review ratings would absolutely make my day. Also, please join the conversation on this episode. Just head over to the Parentpreneur Accelerator community on Facebook, where you'll find other parentpreneurs that are sharing their experiences and helping each other to succeed. To find the group, just visit parentpreneur.com/community. Thanks very much.